Bobby Jr. is nixing 22 projects that use mRNA technology. Experts say mRNA vaccines are safe. And a University of Minnesota professor of infectious diseases and pandemic preparation said, "I don't think I've seen a more dangerous decision in public health in my 50 years in the business." And keep in mind, 50 years ago, the base of the food pyramid was menthol cigarettes.
And that is only somewhat true. True. I'm going with true.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling there's something right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also, elsewhere in the state, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, and up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. There is quite a bit going on today, even as we go to air. Of course, the horrific situation in Gaza got even more horrific over the weekend with Israel's admittedly targeted killing of journalists near a hospital in Gaza City. Back here at home, Donald Trump announced plans to deploy the National Guard in D.C. to fight crime, despite crime being at a 30-year low in the nation's capital. Just moments before airtime, this story is still underway. News is breaking that three have now been killed by a gunman at a Target in Austin, Texas. Guess we're going to have to send in the Federal Guard to Texas. An explosion at a U.S. steel plant near Pittsburgh has killed at least one worker on Monday so far, with one missing and at least 10 others injured under the rubble. Texas Attorney General has asked a state court to expel 13 state House lawmakers for leaving the state to break quorum as allowed by the state constitution in order to block Republicans from stealing five Democratic U.S. House seats in next year's midterms. And a federal judge has once again nixed the Trump administration's motion to release grand jury transcripts regarding the Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell child sex trafficking indictments, rather than simply the administration simply releasing the Epstein files in full, as they already have access to at the Department of Justice and the FBI. We'll get to more on some of those stories, perhaps a little bit later, and maybe some of your calls, if time allows, at 818-985-5735. But last week, I want to start here. Last week on Wednesday's broadcast, I believe, we discussed Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s announcement that he was unilaterally canceling some $500 million in federal grants earmarked by Congress for researching mRNA vaccines for COVID and for the influenza and other infectious diseases, falsely claiming, at least if you believe health and science experts, which RFK is not, that mRNA vaccines do not protect against upper respiratory illnesses like COVID and the flu virus, and in fact are more harmful than helpful against those diseases, according to RFK. Again, that claim is roundly disputed by health professionals around the globe and no doubt observationally by the majority of the approximately 8 billion or so people on this planet who saw with our own eyes the retreat of the COVID-19 virus only after the wide availability and uptake of mRNA vaccines targeting both the spread of COVID and intensity of its infection in humans. The U.S. and the world has the miracle technology of those mRNA vaccines to thank for bringing the global COVID-19 pandemic finally under manageable control after it ravaged the world, shutting down entire nations, crashing the worldwide economy, and bringing the global supply chain to a virtual standstill. The virus would ultimately kill some 7 million people worldwide, according to the conservative numbers of the World Health Organization, including more than 1 million in the U.S. alone, which saw one of the highest per capita death rates among wealthy nations under the failed leadership of the first Donald Trump administration. So I don't know, perhaps he wants to shut down mRNA research in hopes of besting himself during the next pandemic after the worst one that the world has seen in a century. I don't know. But now credit where it's due. While Trump failed on most fronts in the battle to keep the American people safe against the ravages of COVID, his administration, along with Congress, did surge a huge amount of money and resources into researching mRNA vaccine technology the first time around, in hopes of quickly developing a COVID vaccine, one that would eventually and arguably in record time lead the world toward emerging, finally, from our long global nightmare. Now, I know a lot of folks sort of want to forget about that whole period and where we were just a few short years ago and how we came out of those darkest days of the pandemic. But yes, that happened. And while the COVID virus still exists and remains an ever-present threat, the creation of new vaccines produced at record speed thanks to mRNA technology that RFK Jr. now seems dead set on killing, well, that was, in fact, the catalyst that helped us all move out of the grimmest of periods back toward the light, with global immunologists and epidemiologists crediting those vaccines with saving the lives of anywhere from 3 to 14 million people. Despite the remarkable success of both the vaccines and similarly miraculous treatments for those infected by the COVID virus, the Trump administration has been gutting the very federal agencies responsible for helping to see us through that pandemic nightmare at Health and Human Services and the agencies that it oversees, including the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Scientific research grants like those for mRNA vaccines and cures for cancer that have already been approved and appropriated by Congress have been rescinded or otherwise held back by the Trump administration, and thousands of federal workers at numerous agencies overseen by Kennedy's Health and Human Services Department have been summarily removed from their jobs. Many of those workers have joined together in groups like Fired But Fighting, a group meant to challenge the legal premises for their removal from their jobs and to continue the fight for public health in the U.S., even from the unemployment line. So we discussed much of that on Wednesday's broadcast, which now leads us to the story that broke late on Friday. In another instance of the most tragically American of American institutions these days, another indiscriminate attempted mass shooting, this time outside of the headquarters of the CDC in Atlanta. A Georgia man who had blamed the COVID-19 vaccine for making him depressed and suicidal just days after Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had falsely argued against the well-documented safety of mRNA vaccines, such as the one developed to prevent the spread of COVID, Well, that Georgia man has been identified as the shooter who opened fire late on Friday at the CDC, killing a police officer in his attack. The DeKalb County police officer, David Rose, was a former Marine who served in Afghanistan and had just graduated from the police academy this past March. The 30-year-old suspect in the case, who died during the incident, had also tried to get inside the CDC's headquarters, but was stopped by guards before driving to a pharmacy across the street and opening fire. The man, identified as Patrick Joseph White, was armed with five guns, including at least one long gun, according to law enforcement officials. A labor union representing workers at the CDC said the incident was not random and, quote, compounds months of mistreatment, neglect, and vilification that CDC staffers have endured. The union, the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, Local 2883, demanded federal officials condemn vaccine misinformation following the shooting, saying that that misinformation was, in fact, putting scientists at risk. The union charged in a press release that CDC and leadership of the Department of Health and Human Services must provide a, quote, clear and unequivocal stance in condemning vaccine disinformation. Such a public statement by health officials, by federal officials, is needed to prevent violence against scientists, the union said. Thousands of people who work on critical disease research are employed at the CDC's Atlanta campus, where union officials said some staff were huddled in various buildings until late at night on Friday as the shooting was unfolding, including more than 90 young children who were locked down inside the CDC's Clifton School. The shooter's father said that his son had been upset over the death of his dog and had also become fixated on the COVID-19 vaccine. A neighbor told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that the man who was eventually found dead on the second floor of the building across the street from the CDC spoke with her multiple times about his distrust of COVID-19 vaccines in various related conversations. Quote, he was very unsettled and he very deeply believed that vaccines had hurt him and were hurting other people, the neighbor told the Atlanta paper. He emphatically believed that. The group of laid-off CDC employees, called Fired But Fighting, has said that HHS Secretary Kennedy is directly responsible for the villainization of CDC's workforce through, quote, his continuous lies about science and vaccine safety, which have fueled a climate of hostility and mistrust. We call for the immediate resignation of Senator Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and White House Office of Management and Budget Director Russell Vogt. The group said he is one of the architects of Project 2025, the statement from Fired But Fighting declares, citing the right-wing manifesto created by the Heritage Foundation and former Trump officials that includes proposals to restructure and effectively dismantle the CDC as we know it. The armed attack on the CDC, the group notes, which claimed the life of a heroic police officer and left CDC workers devastated and traumatized, reflects the realization of Russell Vogt's directive before taking office when he said, quote, when federal workers wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work because they are increasingly viewed as the villains. We want to put them in trauma, Russ Vogt said. That's Donald Trump's director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. There are no doubt hundreds, if not thousands, of public officials at the CDC, at the NIH, at the HHS, and beyond who are feeling that trauma that Vogt wanted to put them through, feeling that trauma today on the heels of Friday's shooting, if they were not already feeling traumatized before it. The ongoing destruction of our public health infrastructure, Fired But Fighting observes, has destroyed the systems meant to prevent tragedies like this from happening. Cuts to CDC's Injury Prevention Center, including programs to reduce gun violence and support mental health, have put our country at greater risk, they say. We don't need thoughts and prayers, they note. We need an administration that does not villainize federal workers who are just trying to do their job, and a Health and Human Services Secretary who does not promote misinformation about science and vaccines. To join our public health colleagues, they noted, we are here. To our public health colleagues, they noted, we are here for you, and we are not letting this go. Joining us now is Aaron Melton Backus, a founding member of Fired But Fighting, and apparently a now former health communications specialist at the CDC's Office on Smoking and Health, where she worked until Valentine's Day this year, when hundreds of workers were swept up in the first round of dismissals. She said that she remained hopeful that the firing would be reversed earlier this year until her entire office was shut down back in April. Aaron Melton Backus, thank you for joining us today on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
So I realize I covered a lot of ground there in that intro.
Yes, you did.
But before I dive into some of the details with you, Aaron, for a start, did anything jump out at you that I either got egregiously wrong, that I simply left out, that is necessary to understand for background here?
No, I think you really hit the nail on the head, and I really appreciate you going in depth on our statement there.
So tell me about your removal, Aaron, from the CDC's Office of Smoking and Health, because if there's anything I think all Americans could agree on, is that smoking is dangerous. But apparently Kennedy has now shut down even your office, the entire office on smoking and health?
Yes, that was really surprising to a lot of people. So I worked specifically on the Tips from Former Smokers campaign, which is one of the most successful health communication campaigns ever. It's then led to over 1 million people quitting smoking and saved the U.S. millions of dollars in healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people were very surprised. I know smoking rates are at the lowest they've been ever in the U.S., but mm-hmm. there's still a lot of work to be done. And it was a shock that Secretary Kennedy decided that we were no longer necessary, especially as he's declared a war on chronic disease, and smoking is one of the biggest contributors to chronic disease there is.
Is there somewhere else or someone else that will be picking up this work that your office was doing, very effectively doing, because, you know, for so many years, smoking rates, as you note, have been continuously declining for decades. Will that work be done in some other place, as far as you know?
Yeah, it's really unclear. So the National Cancer Institute has an office that works on smoking-related issues, but their focus is a little different than ours. It's more clinically focused. And then FDA has a Center for Tobacco Products, but they were not completely wiped out, but a lot of their staff was let go. So it's very unclear who will pick up this work. There are a couple of nonprofits out there that do smoking prevention, but they also receive a lot of money from CDC. So we don't know if they'll continue to receive that money with the absence of our program.
Now, because the argument for many of the cuts to governmental mm-hmm. agencies that were called for in Project 2025 and that are, yes, now being carried out by the Trump administration, despite his lies during the campaign that he didn't know anything about the project. He wanted to know, you know, mm-hmm. didn't want anything to do with him. The argument is that much of the work done by the federal government would be better handled by the private sector. Mm-hmm. Aaron, what's your response to that argument when it comes to the work that was being done by agencies like NIH, CDC, and even your specific department on smoking and health? Is that going to be picked up by the private sector?
Yeah, I don't think it will be, because part of the problem with public health is that it is not profitable. If you can prevent people from getting sick or very sick to begin with, it doesn't make money for a lot of these private companies. So, I mean, I think maybe with CDC, they're alluding to the fact that, you know, insurance companies and pharma companies might pick up this work, but not that they're all, you know, super nefarious. But if I'm a pharmaceutical company and I sell a cancer drug, am I going to invest a lot of money in preventing a habit that causes cancer to begin with?
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah. And on top of that, you know, government efficiency is one thing. I'm sure it might be welcomed at many a federal agency, you know, making things more efficient. But, you know, RFK announced plans back in March to slash 10,000 in federal health agencies, including 2,400 jobs at the CDC alone. At the same time, he and Trump developed the slogan, Make America Healthy Again. But, you know, gutting the world's premier public health agencies does not seem to be in favor of, you know, making America healthy again. So I hate to ask you, Aaron, to explain whatever the hell RFK Jr. thinks he is doing here. But has he or anybody at CDC or HHS that you worked with explained to you how the thinking goes that firing thousands of federal health workers who have been toiling for decades to, in fact, yes, make America healthy, that somehow that is going to make America healthy again? Do you even understand what they think they're trying to do with all of this?
No, I really don't. And, you know, going back to your point about efficiency, I think those of us who have worked in the government would tell you that it could definitely be made more efficient, but they didn't ask us how we thought we could make it more efficient. You know, the people that work in it day to day, and they kind of just took a sledgehammer to it. With regards to CDC specifically, the line we keep getting is that they're going to return CDC to its original mission, which was purely infectious disease. So, you know, that sounds great in theory, I guess, and they want to make this new agency, the Agency for Healthy America, who is more focused on chronic disease. But what they have failed to realize is that no health problem exists in a silo. You know, your infectious disease is made worse by the fact that you are maybe abusing substances, or if you have a chronic disease, maybe you're more likely to get impacted by an infectious disease. So separating out these programs will not make things more efficient. It will really just slow them down, because suddenly, you know, the people working on COVID-19, instead of just calling up their colleagues who are in a different center to ask about a chronic disease problem, they're having to go through all these different agencies now and go to a completely different agency to ask their chronic disease experts.
Not to mention the time it takes to set up an entirely separate agency.
Yes.
when people are That's dying in the meantime, and then having to go out and hire people to fill those jobs, people who were already working, doing much of that work already at the CDC.
Yes. And I think it's also important to note that in the budget that the president and Secretary Kennedy proposed, there wasn't actually any funding for chronic disease in that. They kept saying it was in the AHA budget, but no one saw it. So people were very confused, too, how they were going to do all this work in AHA when they haven't provided any funding for it. Luckily, the Senate Appropriations Committee largely rejected that budget proposal, but there's still a long road to go there.
Interesting. So they said, well, we're going to shut this down. We're going to do it over here instead. And then they didn't bother to fund that project over there instead.
Yes. And then it's also like, are you going to fire the experts who work on this content and hire completely new people? That doesn't seem very efficient either.
No, it doesn't. Moving to last week's news, Kennedy has been sharply critical of mRNA technology, specifically used in COVID vaccines. In a video he posted on social media last week, let me be clear, the director of the Health and Human Services has no medical or scientific expertise whatsoever. But he claimed that mRNA vaccines do not protect against upper respiratory illnesses like COVID and the flu, and that, in fact, they simply drive viruses to evolve, and that a single mutation in a virus renders the vaccine completely ineffective. So it's all a waste of money. Is there any scientific basis for any of those claims, Aaron Backus?
No, and I'm not an mRNA expert. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm sure there are other people who could give you a much better answer than me. But, you know, yes, mRNA vaccines they're made specifically to address viruses that evolve quickly, because they're easier to come up with a new, vaccine. So we saw it during the COVID pandemic when there would be a new variant wave that started, they were able to make a booster that was formulated for that very quickly. And part of that is because of the technology that they use.
And even if there was some validity to the claims that he's making. I know you're not a medical doctor yourself, but even if there was validity to those claims, wouldn't it make more sense to simply task the researchers at NIH or CDC, who have long been working on the mRNA vaccines, long before, by the way, long before the COVID pandemic even arrived, I should note, to task them with examining and proving or disproving his theories about it, the people who have been working on it? I mean, as the head of HHS, can't he ask them to do exactly that?
Yeah, he should be able to say, like, hey, we want to do a more in-depth study on these vaccines. And, you know, that would be within his power to do, and maybe he would be right to do it. He could say, you know, we made these very quickly. Let's test them more closely now that we have more time and it's not such an emergency. I don't think it's necessary because we know that these vaccines are safe. The technology, even though we haven't used it, has been around for decades. And they saved millions of lives. So I don't think it's necessary, but it'd be well within his right to do it.
But exactly. I mean, he had an agency there that could have done it. It makes one wonder if he actually intends to do it or if, as we've seen in other areas in this administration, they're just going to make up, you know, find some deniers, make up some phony reports using AI and try to pass that all off as scientific research. Aaron, following the horrible news of the shooting at the CDC in Atlanta on Friday. And by the way, where were you? Were you posted in Atlanta?
Yes, so I'm in Atlanta. I was at home getting ready for the night when the news started breaking.
So you know the area where this shooting took place, the pharmacy building across the street and so forth?
Yeah, so our organization and another organization of retired CDC folks hold rallies out on that corner many, many times a month. As recently as April, we had a crowd of about 200 people. And we were listening as our Senator Raphael Warnock gave a speech from the steps that the gunman was standing on.
Well, in the wake of that horrible news of that shooting at the CDC in Friday, on Friday in Atlanta, the U.S. Surgeon General from the Biden administration, Dr. Jerome Adams, he was very critical over the weekend on Meet the Press of Bobby Kennedy's response to the tragedy at the CDC headquarters. Let me play a little bit of that.
How you respond to a crisis defines a leader. And quite frankly, Secretary Kennedy has failed in his first major test in this regard. It took him over 18 hours to issue a tepid response to these horrific shootings. And that's not even considering how his inflammatory rhetoric in the past has actually contributed to a lot of what's been going on.
Now, your group, Aaron, Fired But Fighting, which issued a statement calling it, quote, horrific and yet completely preventable. You called for Kennedy and White House Budget Director Director Russell Vogt to resign, that they should be removed from office. That seems unlikely to happen. But how do you see what they are doing as tied to the shooting on Friday at the CDC, and how might it have been, quote, completely preventable, as you see it?
Yeah. I mean, Bobby Kennedy has been a major spreader of vaccine mis- and disinformation for decades. But going back to 2020 and the pandemic, he repeatedly spread lies about the COVID-19 vaccine, calling it, you know, the most dangerous vaccine or medical technology there is out there. He called CDC a cesspool of corruption. And that has really made a lot of people at CDC villainized. So my expertise is in social media, and like, obviously you cannot believe everything that the trolls in the social media comments talk about. But when I was working on the COVID-19 response, we would get some of the most vile messages on our social media saying that we are no better than the Germans during World War II, that we deserve to be held accountable for our crimes, and that we, you know, are killing people. And a lot of those people were getting their information from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and people like him. And when the pandemic was happening, I never could have imagined that one day this man, who was kind of considered on the fringe of the health community, would be basically my boss until I was fired.
Yeah.
So you know, that was wild. But,
And the notion, I mean, Aaron, I think I'm old enough to remember when, you know, 5 p.m. would roll around every night. We would all go to our windows, bang pots and pans and applause for the health workers who were struggling through all of this to try to figure out some way to keep us alive, to stop the spread of it, for things to have turned around the way they have, to put a guy who does not believe, apparently, in vaccines. Mm-hmm. Actually, he does believe in vaccines. There's apparently a 100-year-old vaccine technology that he wants to, wholesale vaccine, that he wants to put back in place, despite the fact that while it was effective, apparently it set off high fevers and seizures. That is apparently what he wants to move back. I mean, if people got seizures after taking the COVID vaccine, I cannot even imagine the kind of pushback that it would have received from folks like, I don't know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Right. And like, you know, seizures are not great for your brain. Like they can cause brain damage. So that I would think that's something you would want to avoid.
It's, yeah. Earlier this year, I know that you stated you were hopeful that some of your colleagues might see their jobs restored. Last week, in fact, on the show, I was happy to report on the National Weather Service now apparently hiring back hundreds of workers, meteorologists and so forth, after firing hundreds of them earlier this year under a similar program I suspect that you were let go under. Is there any hopeful signs like that of similar reversals that you're seeing or hearing about at HHS or any of its agencies?
I mean, they brought back about 500 of the people who were originally let go in the reduction in force, not my office. So I think they know that some of the offices they let go were essential. My office is covered under a lawsuit. We're still, you know, there's still the likelihood that they find that we were wrongfully terminated, but I don't know if I'm holding up that much hope at this point. I think myself and a lot of others were kind of just hoping that if or when we get through this, that maybe there will be some way for us to get our jobs back under a new administration, because we're not very hopeful that the courts or will, you know, rule in our favor. And if they do rule in our favor, will they just try to fire us again?
Are those cases still moving forward? Are they on appeal? What's the status of some of those challenges?
Yeah, the one I'm on is on appeal right now. We haven't had an update in a while, so.
Appeal after you lost the first round or won the first round?
Won the first round.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're just sitting around waiting for something to happen. And
normally that would be good news. You won in court, and yet you don't sound very encouraged about that fact.
I think we're pretty nervous about the Supreme Court. You know, there have been a few surprises out there where they have ruled in a different way than we expected, but largely they've been siding with the administration. So most people are pretty pessimistic that once it reaches the Supreme Court, it'll get overturned.
All right. Well, I'm going to remind you that the name of your organization is Fired But Fighting.
Yes.
So we're going to need you to keep fighting, Aaron.
Yes. And we are also fighting for the future of public health. So even if I am officially terminated, you know, we will stay here and we will fight for the public health of our nation.
Thank you for that. Is there anything that we the people can do to help out in this fine mess, as you and or fired but fighting see it? Is there anything that we could do to help your efforts or help the overall efforts in general?
I think, I mean, as annoying as it is, keep calling and emailing your representatives, especially if they're Republican. All three of my representatives are Democrats, so like they hear me call and they say, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And Democrats can be doing more. I think they can be, you know, trying to find creative ways to block what the administration is doing, and they can be standing up for us. But we also need these Republicans to be terrified of us. We need them to know that if they do not start voting for the best interests of their constituents, we will vote them out next year. So definitely call them, email them, show up their town halls if they're having them. Most of them won't. And I think also just talk to people around you about what is happening. And if you want to learn more about public health, you can visit our website. There are a couple of other great organizations that are fighting for the future of public health and health research. So you can, you know, follow those groups and just learn about what public health is if you don't know, and talk about it with people.
Yeah, and I would remind members of Congress, Democrats or Republicans, that the money that is being withheld from, you know, offices like the CDC Office of Smoking and Health is money that they appropriated for those offices and to fight those chronic diseases, illnesses, and so forth, and that this administration is sort of giving Congress a big finger and saying, nope, we're not going to spend that money the way you wanted us to. We're going to do whatever I want, whatever we want.
It's money that goes directly into their communities, too. Mm-hmm. 80% of CDC's budget goes back out into state and local health departments. So this is not just, you know, impacting me and my friends in Atlanta. This is going to impact people across the country.
Aaron Melton Backus is a former health communications specialist at the CDC, sadly, formerly, at least for now. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the founding members of Fired But Fighting. You can find them on the internet at firedbutfighting.org. And you can follow them on Blue Sky at Fired But Fighting. Aaron, really appreciate you joining us today and your continuing to fight as loud and as long as you can.
Oh, hey, thank you so much.
You bet. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back with more news today. If you want to ring in on any of that, I don't even know if I got to say hello to you today. I had so much to jump straight into. Your mic just shorted out. I heard it click. I heard it go out. Are you there? I can hear you on the other microphone now, so it does.
Okay,
there you
go. How about that one?
Now
yes, that one works.
You.
Excellent.
Hi, Des.
Hi.
No wonder I didn't say hello to you. It's just too difficult, apparently.
There we go.
You noted that RFK Jr. is a super spreader of disinformation.
Yes, based on what Aaron just said. Yes.
Yeah, it really is the case, isn't it? It's just remarkable. Anyway, got some other news to cover, but if you want to jump in, I don't know if we'll have time or not, but 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-5735. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with some more news and maybe your calls if time allows. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. A prominent Al Jazeera journalist who had raised concerns about being killed has now died in an Israeli airstrike on Sunday in Gaza. Anas al-Sharif, known for documenting the release of hostages, was killed while inside a tent for journalists outside al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, along with three colleagues. Said Al Jazeera in a statement on Sunday, quote, "Our colleagues at Al Jazeera Arabic report that journalist Anas al-Sharif and Mohammed Krakay were killed, along with camera operators Ibrahim Zahir and Mohammed Nufal, in an Israeli airstrike on Gaza." In July, al-Sharif told the Committee to Protect Journalists that he lived with the, quote, "feeling that I could be bombed and martyred at any moment." He was widely known for his coverage of the war in Gaza, particularly his reporting on the release of Israeli hostages captured by Hamas. In January this year, after a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel, al-Sharif drew widespread attention when, during a live broadcast, he removed his body armor while surrounded by dozens of Gaza residents celebrating the temporary halt in hostilities. A few minutes before his death, al-Sharif posted on Twitter, now known as X, quote, "Breaking. Intense, concentrated Israeli bombardment using fire belts is hitting the eastern and southern areas of Gaza City. An Al Jazeera journalist in Gaza, Hani Mahmoud, said, quote, "This is perhaps the hardest thing I'm reporting about the past 22 months. I'm not far from Al-Shifa Hospital, just one block away, and I could hear the massive explosion that took place in the past half an hour or so near Al-Shifa Hospital. I could see it when it lit up the sky, and within moments, the news circulated that it was the journalist camp at the main gate of the Al-Shifa Hospital." Al-Sharif and his colleagues have been reporting from Gaza since the beginning of the conflict. Said Mahmoud, quote, "It's important to highlight that this attack is just a week after an Israeli military official directly accused Anas and directly ran a campaign of incitement on Al Jazeera and correspondents on the ground because of their work, because of their relentless reporting on the starvation and the famine and the malnutrition," Mahmoud added. Reuters led its coverage of the killing of Al-Sharif this way. Israel's military said it targeted and killed a Hamas cell leader posing as an Al Jazeera journalist in an airstrike on Gaza City on Sunday, a claim condemned by the Qatari broadcaster. So at least we know that Israel has, apparently at least, admitted targeting Al-Sharif. This was not an accident. An official at the hospital said there were 7 people killed in the strike. The Israeli military said in a statement, citing intelligence and documents said to have been found in Gaza as evidence, quote, "Anas Al-Sharif served as the head of a terrorist cell in the Hamas terrorist organization and was responsible for advancing rocket attacks against Israeli civilians and IDF, Israeli troops." Palestinian militant group Hamas, which runs Gaza, said the killing may signal the start of an Israeli offensive, warning in a statement, quote, "The assassination of journalists and the intimidation of those who remain paves the way for a major crime that the occupation is planning to commit in Gaza City." Palestinian journalist groups and Al Jazeera denounced the killings, calling Al-Sharif, quote, "one of Gaza's bravest journalists." Al Jazeera described the attack as, quote, "a desperate attempt to silence voices in anticipation of the complete occupation of Gaza." Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who, it should always be noted, would face likely expulsion as prime minister and perhaps jail time for a number of both personal corruption crimes and war crimes, and therefore needs to ensure that this war never ends, as we've been telling you for years now. He has said in recent days that he would launch a new offensive to take control of Gaza, full control, and specifically of Gaza City, where a hunger crisis is escalating after 3.5 years of war. The IDF, Israeli Defense Organization, is on record opposing such an incursion to take over Gaza City. But nonetheless, not Netanyahu's far-right government has approved such a plan. According to Al Jazeera, quote, "Anas Al-Sharif and his colleagues were among the last remaining voices in Gaza conveying the tragic reality to the world." A press freedom group and a UN expert previously warned that Al-Sharif's life was in danger due to his reporting from Gaza. UN Special Rapporteur Irene Khan said last month Israel's claims against him were unsubstantiated. And in July, the Committee to Protect Journalists urged the international community to protect Al-Sharif. Looks like they and we failed to do so. 818-985-5735 is our number. Meanwhile, back here in the U.S., where Donald Trump had his practice run, apparently recently, deploying federal troops to the streets of a major U.S. city here in Los Angeles in order to pretend that they were being used to institute law and order when, in fact, they were just sitting around doing much of nothing. Well, Trump is now using similar authority to invade Washington, D.C. Donald Trump on Monday announced that he will federalize D.C.'s police department and deploy some 800 National Guard troops to the nation's capital in historic restrictions on local control over the district, as described by NBC News, NBC 4 in Washington. Quote, "This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back," Trump said, confusing just a few of us who thought Liberation Day was back on April 2, when he held a big ceremony at the White House to announce that day as Liberation Day, the day that he was instituting massive tariffs against products imported from virtually every nation on the planet, except for Russia. Tariffs that are actually sales tax against the American people. I thought that was Liberation Day. But today's new Liberation Day, apparently, is to answer what he describes as an emergency crime epidemic in D.C., despite the fact that crime was at a 30-year low before Trump took office earlier this year and has since fallen 26% as compared to the same period last year. That, according to the Metropolitan Police Department. The reported assault of a 19-year-old former Doge staffer during an alleged attempted carjacking last week appears to have hit a nerve with Trump, according to NBC4. Trump said that he's now bringing 800 National Guard members to assist with law enforcement in D.C., though it was not immediately clear where they will be deployed or what they will actually be doing. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said that the D.C. National Guard will be, quote, flowing into the streets of Washington in the coming week. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi said, quote, crime in D.C. is ending and ending today. Apparently, she will now lead Washington's Metropolitan Police Force in addition to running the Department of Justice. And new Drug Enforcement Administrator Terry Cole will be the interim federal commissioner of MPD, the Metropolitan Police Department, according to Trump. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser described Trump's takeover of the department as, quote, unsettling and unprecedented. Given the fall in crime in the city, I might also suggest that it is wholly unnecessary, but authoritarians gotta authoritarianate, I guess, especially when they'd rather talk about anything but what's in those Epstein files that he appears to be in, that he had promised to release, until changing his mind after learning that he's actually in those documents detailing Jeffrey Epstein's years of sex trafficking underage girls. But don't look at that. Look at this instead. He's deploying federal troops to the streets of D.C. The very thing that he said the law did not allow him to do, that he did not have the authority to do, back on January 6 of 2021. Remember that? When he said only Nancy Pelosi can do that. Back when he had incited his own supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol in hopes of stealing the 2020 election. But I guess that was then, and this is now, and we have no memory of anything that ever came before today. Am I right? Here's Mayor Bowser in D.C. on Sunday in advance of Trump's Monday announcement.
Now, if the priority is to show force in an American city, we know he can do that here. But it won't be because there's a spike in crime. It's kind of easy fodder on the campaign trail. But now we're talking about governing.
D.C. Attorney General Brian Schwab called the administration's actions, quote, unprecedented, unnecessary, and unlawful, unquote, noting, quote, there is no crime emergency in the District of Columbia. Violent crime in D.C. reached historic 30-year lows last year and is down another 26% so far this year. We are considering all of our options, and we will do whatever is necessary to protect the rights and safety of district residents. Trump, meanwhile, said he hopes that other cities, including Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, are watching the steps that he announced in D.C. and will take steps to, quote, self-clean up before, I guess, he deploys federal troops across the United States. He said, if needed, the administration will take similar steps in other cities. Of course, we're here in Los Angeles.
Does this work?
Yes. Yes, it does.
It is fantastic. Yes. Good. I just wanted to point out that I think what this is actually about is that Trump needs a pretext to deploy American troops to American cities.
Yep.
And that he is just, this is part of him normalizing that pathway to putting the National Guard in a bunch of cities. And, you know, he might, I guess, want to get the public used to the idea of deploying them in advance of the 2026 election, potentially.
Ironically, as national security expert and attorney Bradley Moss responded to Trump's announcement at the White House on Monday, he wrote, quote, on that stage, you have a convicted felon. You have an FBI director who pled the fifth in a grand jury investigation. You have a Secretary of Defense who had to pledge sobriety to get confirmed. And you have a U.S. attorney, that would be Fox News' Jeanine Pirro, now the U.S. attorney in D.C., who helped saddle her former employer with an $800 million settlement. You know, those are the rule of law, folks. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, good to speak with you again. Hey, really quickly, they could solve this really like in a snap, right? If the National Guard just goes to the White House, right, and arrest those people, you know, they could end this right now. But, you know, who knows what they're going to do? I think they're out of control, you know. But
are you calling for a military coup, Rob?
No. I was wondering if the military could say no to this, you know. It's like, you know, what I'm saying, too, is like why is Trump federalizing this? You know, they could go. Yeah, well, I guess I am calling for a coup, but not in so many words. You know, I wouldn't say it like that. You know,
Actually, you better not. Not over the public airwaves. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate the call, sir. Good luck when they come to find you, my friend. 818-985-5735. You mentioned Rob mentions. You know, can they say no to this? Under what's the authority here? Well, Trump says he's invoking Section 740 of the 1973 District of Columbia Home Rule Act in order to federalize the Metropolitan Police Department. So under that law, the president is allowed to federalize the MPD for 48 hours. And then he's got to notify Congress about why he's doing it. And then he is allowed to keep them there, but only for a total of 30 days before he must then get official full approval from Congress. All of which is written into the law to handle emergencies, really. This is decidedly not an emergency, unless you consider a former Doge kid nicknamed Big Balls getting carjacked while crime is at a 30-year low to be some sort of an emergency that we need to deploy federal troops for, the National Guard for that. For that, we'll do it. When Big Balls gets roughed up, we'll send in the troops. But when the Capitol itself is actually being attacked by thousands of weapon-wielding thugs at the direction of Donald Trump, well, we have no authority to do anything about that. The president can't send out the national troops. Are you crazy? Only Nancy Pelosi can do that or something. The Home Rule Act says that when the president, quote, determines that special conditions of an emergency exist, he can place D.C. police officers under federal control before providing notification and explanations to Congress. The law does not specify the different conditions for congressional recesses, as Congress is not actually scheduled to return to D.C. from recess until September 3. And so whether they're gone or not, the president can only federalize the D.C. police force for 30 days unless Congress passes a joint resolution authorizing an extension. A, do you think they will do that? And B, do you think any of these laws mean anything to this president who thinks he can do whatever the hell he wants? Harold in Santa Barbara, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Oh, Harold, are you there?
Oh, yeah, now I can hear you. Hey, that's some great comments you made. And I called just to say when you have a bad leader or an evil leader, he tends to have evil followers. But more importantly, you brought up something that really bothered me, and that is Congress is gone right now. This would be a perfect move for another coup, because in my hometown of Redlands, the police department and the local sheriff, they don't run this city or this county. Mm. There's three individuals, and it's not a lot of fun when you're what did my friends call me? I'm a marked man, but I'm still here. And I'm still listening to you.
Well,
and
now
you're still making me laugh.
No, well, that's good. At least there's that. Now you're not calling for a coup. You're warning that it could be a time for a coup. Is that? I'm trying to understand what you were what you were worried about there, Harold. Because if you're calling for a coup,
I am worried. But no, I'm not calling for a coup.
Okay, good.
What I was saying in my hometown, there's already been a coup. The local government is run by, well, three individuals, and they're big boys. I mean, these guys got some power.
Okay. Thank you, Harold. I appreciate that call, sir. Do we have time for one or two more? Very quickly here, let me go to Peter in Santa Monica. Hey, Peter, welcome to the broadcast. I only got about 30 seconds, I'm sorry to say.
Hey, how are you? Hey, so you're coming up with this ridiculous idea that we don't want to have safer streets.
Nope.
And you wonder why.
Nope.
And you're wondering why Trump defunded you.
Nope.
Good luck, pal.
Okay, thanks. I'm not defunded by anybody, pal, and I never said I don't want safer streets. But I do want to thank you for making stuff up because you don't have a real argument. That was Peter, apparently, from Santa Monica. Just making stuff up rather than coming up with any real ideas, which is a shame, but that is what we see from Republicans. If there are Republicans, hey, next week, you want to call in and make a legitimate argument? Glad to have it. Let me hit Morris. He can do this in 15 seconds. Go, Mo, in Long Beach.
Baby, listen, I can't hear you. You can hear me. Don't do any reporting from Gaza. We love you here. We couldn't get you no insurance over there. And by the way, President Maduro put a $50 million bounty out for the Epstein tapes. So whoever comes up with the Epstein tapes, your boy Maduro will pay you $50 million.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
Working on it. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Did he say don't go reporting from Gaza because we can't get any insurance to cover me? Then I'll stay right here. Sounds good to me. Hey, we got to get out. Thanks to everyone who called in today. Thanks to our guest, Aaron Melton Backus of FiredButFighting.org. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending your day or night with us, a part of it at least. We greatly appreciate it. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, telling the truth at the Brad Blog. Follow me there. We'll see you there until we see you here. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.